Hello and welcome to the Foxworthy Podcast, episode number 8, I think. Are we on 8?
I believe so.
I will fix this if that's not right. Hello everyone. We took a break last week because both Taylor and I were incredibly busy, but we're back this week. We have a couple of things we wanted to touch on. I think we're just going to jump right in and start talking about some of the shakeup that's been going on with a lot of the culture writers on the internet. It seems like, for whatever reason, it all kind of happened simultaneously.
So let's run through as many of these as we can remember.
Oh my gosh.
So it started... When did it start? It started with the Hitfix thing? Was that the first one?
I think so.
So Daniel Feinberg...
Writer for Hitfix.
TV writer for Hitfix. He mostly... He did a lot of coverage of ratings and cancellations and stuff, from what I saw.
Business stuff, yeah. He left to go to the
He went to
Hollywood,
the Hollywood Reporter.
Reporter.
He was a close friend of Alan Sepinwall. Their podcast ended when he left, naturally. Well, ended shortly after he left. They kept it going for a little while. So he left, and then you mentioned to me that there was a shakeup at Vox that I never...
Yeah, I saw something, somebody left, or they got somebody new, or I'm not really sure, I don't remember the details and the names, unfortunately, but I noticed that it happened fairly recently.
Yeah, so, I guess for those that aren't familiar, like, Vox, AV Club, Grantland, Hitfix, Hollywood Reporter, are those, like, the main culture websites?
There's probably more.
I know there's
probably
more.
Hundreds more, but... Those are the ones that I feel like I just pay attention to the
most.
Those
are the ones that have
their
little circle where like they're always tweeting at each other.
Correct. Yeah. It seems like on Twitter, a lot of these writers will tweet to each other and kind of, you can sort of see in real time their discussions on certain moments in culture, you know, TV shows.
Yeah. What's her name?
Movies.
Is it the Washington Post, the Huffington Post, that woman, Mo Ryan or something?
Oh, yeah. I'm not sure.
Someone else is, like, in the loop. But basically, if there's a way to figure out who is in the TCA, like, that's pretty much who this group of people is,
The Television Critics Association, right?
Right.
And then, of course, we had the announcement, I don't know how many months ago that was, that Bill Simmons was leaving Grantland.
Right. So I guess that's when this really all started, was Grantland, which was Bill Simmons' brainchild, and... Basically, ESPN's more long-form sports and pop culture website.
Right.
They do a lot of good sports and pop culture stuff. Like, their sports stuff is very, like, analytically driven and kind of forward-thinking.
I've seen a lot of people refer to Grantland as a sports blog. I don't know if that's really accurate, but I've seen a lot of people just be like, oh,
It's more like an online magazine.
Yeah, it seems like that.
The pieces are almost always... like 2,000 to 4,000 words.
Mm-hmm.
But it's owned by
ESPN, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Now the question has long been like how much money is ESPN actually making off of this website? Because
right.
It's a lot of work, and I imagine it was a lot of dollars to get it running for a site that no one's really sure how popular it is. I have seen numbers on it before, but I don't remember them now. And Simmons was a like superstar at ESPN. He had the biggest following of his column, probably of any like sports writer on the internet. And he kind of became known for his unique voice of being a Boston sports fan who wrote
mm-hmm.
about sports like as a homer and integrating pop culture and stuff like that as well. So when he created this website, everybody thought it would be interesting, and then he started bringing in some names, and people on the internet started to say, wow, this could really be something awesome.
Yeah, I know that they recruited Wesley Morris from the Boston Globe, who was basically a film critic, won the Pulitzer several years ago. So he came over from the Boston Globe, and he was one of their big names in terms of a writer that people were very familiar with that came on to the Grantland staff.
And Simmons also, in his attempts to be the guy who spoke the truth,
right,
got himself in a lot of trouble with ESPN since they're in bed with the NFL and a lot of really powerful companies.
Maybe this is off topic and we can cut it if it's not that relevant, but he was suspended, but why? I never really heard the story. Do you know why he was suspended?
The first time? Or
how many times? Well, does this happen a lot?
Well, it all started like last September. There was the Ray Rice thing, for those who aren't familiar, the NFL player.
He said something about that?
Yeah, so Ray Rice was the NFL player who knocked out his fiance in an elevator, and it got caught on camera, and then he got suspended, and Simmons basically said something about the NFL commissioner, Roger Goodell, how he wouldn't have done anything if it wasn't on camera. He basically just made disparaging comments about Goodell.
Oh.
And then ESPN was like, don't do that. And they suspended him for a while. Like, he was basically daring them to suspend him during the podcast that he was saying these things. And then he came back, and it was, like, really never the same. I don't know that he ever... I don't recall what he did that finally set them off, but it was something similar where he said something about Roger Goodell or made a subtle ESPN jab or something. And eventually he got suspended and effectively fired. He had a guy high up in ESPN, I believe his name's John Skipper, one of the high up executives who was like, he loved Simmons and he was like his, they were like a father-son type of deal.
Right.
And eventually, like, everyone but him had turned on Simmons long before that, but eventually he did as well, and that was when it was pretty much over.
Hmm.
And he quit, in the middle of summer at some point?
Yeah. And they announced that Simmons was leaving, and then fairly shortly after that, just a few months after that, I think they announced that he was going to go to HBO, and he had a deal with them.
But he couldn't actually leave ESPN until the end of September, because that's when his contract ended. And he was also the editor of Grantland, which is why this is relevant, because losing your editor, and especially an editor like him who was super involved and founded the website.
Right, and kind of made it what it is.
And losing him in that way, where, like, people weren't sure if the site was sustainable without him, and without his readership that he attracts.
Yeah.
And he, of course, said that he thought it was in good hands and left and etc. but then, and this is very Grantland centric, but then Wesley Morris, who you mentioned earlier, announced he was going to write for the New York Times.
Correct.
And then there goes Grantland's number one movie guy. And then more recently, their executive editor, the guy who basically took over for Simmons, I believe his name's Dan Fearman. I don't know if that's how you say it. But he was just announced that he's going to be the editor for MTV News.
Okay.
So they just slowly started losing people. And then yesterday, we're recording this on Tuesday, on Monday there was a mass exodus of deputy editors and other pop culture editors from the site. In Mallory Rubin, Juliet Littman,
Sean
Fennessy, and Chris Ryan.
Right.
So now the site is just completely in flux.
Yeah. To say the least.
There have been rumors among media reporters, such as, like, Sports Illustrated's Richard Deitch, that there will be more people leaving Grantland in the future, in the near future, probably. So, that coupled with the HitFix shakeup, the Vox shakeup, the Dissolved.
Yeah, terrific film website devoted specifically to film. They had a ton of great writers, many of whom I believe were writing for the AV Club. Beautifully designed website, you know, gorgeous layout. And they wrote really interesting pieces on film, and they had film reviews, and I read it pretty religiously. but they died in the summer. Like, I guess they just, the readership wasn't there, and they couldn't afford to keep it going, so that folded. And it just seems like, I'm trying to think, I feel like there's some other things we're missing, but basically, it seems like there's just kind of been like a musical chairs of, you know, this writer goes over to this other place, which I guess this stuff kind of happens, but it seems like right now, over the past like 4 to 5 months, maybe more, it's been consistent, and with just all these different publications, people are just leaving jobs to go to another similar job at another place, and then there's just been a huge shakeup in the world, just like sort of the world of like internet culture writers. It seems like a lot of the people I follow on Twitter, or people I follow on Twitter that work with somebody who's leaving, you know.
Yeah, maybe we'll realize 5 years from now that this happens really often.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I mean, this
but
could
the
be
Grayland
thing
is definitely
right
unique, because there hasn't really been a site like that before.
Right.
It is also notable that three different podcasts that were like fairly popular, if you were ever to go to like the TV and film section of the iTunes podcast store,
right,
they all are over now.
Correct.
So first it was the HitFix one, which was called Firewall and Iceberg, and that was Alan Sepinwall and Daniel
Feinberg. Feinberg, yeah.
And then Do You Like Prince Movies,
yep,
which I was never a huge fan of, but it was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it.
Which was the Grantland Movie Podcast with Wesley Morris and Alex Papademos, who, as of now, is still at Grantland.
Correct.
And is their number one movie writer now, I suppose.
Yeah.
And then just yesterday, we now have to... I don't even know which stage of grief we're in at this point. But probably my favorite podcast is now over. Abruptly, which is the Hollywood Prospectus podcast, which has my favorite TV writer, Andy Greenwald, and Chris Ryan.
Who is one of the editors now leaving Grantland.
Who was one of the four editors that announced on Twitter yesterday that he's out. And they all said they're going to join Bill Simmons on some future mystery project.
Super secret mystery project.
Who knows what that means, because it's HBO, and HBO can basically do whatever they want.
Right.
So it could be... another
I kinda
website,
wonder if it's like, but... I mean, he is going to have a talk show. That is something that we do know, right? Like,
yes.
HBO gave him a talk show for, what, 5 years, 3 years or something?
He is
like,
going to have
a
talk show.
He has a deal with them.
I kind of doubt he's bringing them on as, like, writers for his
show.
No,
I doubt that, but I think it's interesting that, like, I don't know. We'll see what happens.
But I really do want to mourn the death of the Hollywood Prospectus podcast, because I feel like, in a lot of ways, that podcast was actually... my entry into this kind of world, because I initially was just a big sports fan, and when Grantland started, I just thought it was interesting. And the first time I listened to that podcast, I basically had no idea what they were saying, because I was probably like 15 or 16 or whenever they started. I don't remember when Grantland started.
Right.
But... they were talking about Breaking Bad and, like...
just, like...
Homeland or whatever
picking
else.
Picking it apart in a really interesting way.
Yeah, and they're picking it apart...
probably like, what are they talking about?
They were picking it apart in a way where it literally went over my head. And I was just listening to it, like, these guys are way too smart for a Grantland bot, whatever this is.
Yeah.
And in a way, it was like taking some kind of TV 101 class.
Right.
Because... I really was just like, I want to understand what they're saying, because it sounds like I'm listening to two... I mean, in retrospect, they're not, like, super smart, like, anybody... I mean, I do think they're smart guys,
right,
but, like, anybody can probably follow what they're saying.
Right.
But at the time, I was just like, I don't know what this is about. And before too long, I had actually, you know, watched Breaking Bad, and then started listening to them more religiously, and... kind of started to appreciate how smart and different their views were.
Yeah.
And they were just, like, one of my favorites. Like,
yeah,
they were
funny and entertaining, for sure.
Yeah, I loved listening to them every week, and...
I think it's safe to say that they were probably an influence on why we wanted to have our own podcast.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, I'll just be honest about that.
Yeah,
that was
I don't,
kind
like...
of the type of thing that I was going for, where it was just kind of, like... two people chilling, talking about things that they've been enjoying and watching and kind of discussing them in, you know, what a way that they thought was interesting, trying to take a different angle on it.
And similarly to Seppenwall and Feinberg, it's kind of like all four of those guys, when their podcasts ended, were like, oh, we're still going to talk to each other about this stuff. It just won't be recorded.
Right.
And we kind of did... That's sort of why we started it, too, because we were like, we talk about this stuff all the time. Yeah, why not record
for,
it?
I mean, for hours cares? On end.
Yeah, who cares who's going to listen? We might as well just do it.
It's just good practice and good, you know, it just put it out there and kind of just not be afraid. And I think we've gotten into a nice groove. And, you know, we're always trying to find new things to talk about, trying to watch different things that we wouldn't necessarily watch just so we can talk about them.
Yeah, and I don't know if Andy and Chris will ever be recorded again on the podcast.
Cross my fingers.
But, I mean, they're definitely a huge influence on me. And specifically, Andy Greenwald is a huge influence on me as a writer, just because, mm-hmm. like, he basically does the kind of writing that I would love to do. And I doubt that they'll ever listen to this, but if they do,
yeah,
they should know that they're very important to young whippersnappers like us.
For sure. So, I mean, we kind of mentioned earlier that maybe we're just naive and this is something that tends to happen every few years. But if it isn't, let's just say theoretically that this is not traditionally how it works, where, you know, people from different publications all simultaneously just kind of rearrange and go to different publications and kind of play this musical chairs. Why do you think this might be happening now? Is there any reason that we can think of? Just because there's so much being written about culture that it's like people just...
I actually find the fact that it's happening now to be one of the things that's kind of weird about it. Well, not weird. There's two aspects to this. The first is that the journalism industry slash, you know, publication, like, I don't know if you could call it all journalism, but the writing industry is in flux in a lot of ways, and mm-hmm. I think we both know that because we're both journalism majors.
Right.
Like, newspapers are dying, you know.
Yeah.
Magazines are dying, blah, blah, blah. All that stuff. So people are, like, really trying to figure out a way to monetize writing for people, mm-hmm. especially on the internet where mostly it's just, you can pretty much view it for free. Obviously there's mm-hmm. advertising, but it's just a very challenging industry to monetize at this point, I think. But that coupled with the fact that TV is in an amazing place right now as an industry.
Exploding.
It has more original scripted shows than ever, I think.
Yeah.
You know, FX's president, John Landgraf, said it was 400 or something.
Yeah, just over 400, I think, for the year 2015.
Just for this year.
Which that sparked, like, a million think pieces. So, like, we don't have to go too much into that specifically, but we talk about TV a lot on this because I think we both watch a lot. I mean, we try to touch on some other things here and there, but, like, mostly it ends up being about television and what's going on currently. So, do you find this frustrating at all? That there's just, like... Because I'm just, like... I feel like I'm just overwhelmed. Like, there's hundreds of shows that I will never even watch that might be amazing. But it's just... I feel like everyone's just competing for, you know, attention, basically. And I feel like, you know, Crackle's got their original shows, and everybody's got their original shows. I guess Snapchat was going to have, like, some kind of original content department. I don't know if it was going to be really, like, television, but I saw that they folded yesterday. Like, they collapsed that project.
Huh, I hadn't heard of it.
But, yeah, I don't know. I just, what do you think about this? I mean, do you think it's just exciting because there's so much, or do you think it's almost just, like, too much? Like, it's just gluttonous, and, like, the market is just going to be too saturated.
It is... It's definitely too much in a lot of ways, but I don't hate that it's too much,
mm-hmm.
because the way that the industry has like segmented and turned into all these different niches has created life for shows that wouldn't normally have life.
That's true.
Like one of our favorite shows, Hannibal, would have never lived for three seasons on a broadcast network, you know, 10 years ago.
Right.
Halt and Catch Fire just got renewed for season 3.
Woo! Holler. I'm excited about that.
Which would never happen.
No. That's
the TV
kind of shocking because they don't even have, I think with, like, the DVR stuff factored in, like, the highest rated episode that they had wasn't even, like, a million viewers. It was only, like, 900,000 or something. Ridiculous.
And that also has a lot to do with the fact that The Walking Dead makes a lot of money for AMC,
right.
So they can probably afford to support a show or two.
Exactly.
Like Halt and Catch Fire. But it's definitely good in the sense that shows like that get to live. But there are also a lot of decent to good shows that just won't have a chance.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least won't really be watched.
Mm-hmm.
Like I watched the pilot of Narcos the other night,
mm-hmm.
the Netflix show.
Right.
About the Colombian drug trade. And it's fine, and it's interesting. The story is really interesting, and it looks nice, and it's just...
Yeah.
It seems like a pretty entertaining show. But
it's not top tier.
Yeah, like, a lot of me, like, I watched it, and I just thought, that's fine, but, like, you know, there's so much other stuff I could watch, too,
mm-hmm.
that I prefer, or that seems more essential. That's the thing, is people are trying to decide what is essential, because you just don't have time to watch everything. People like Andy Greenwald and Alan Sepinwall and people who we've talked about, who it's their full-time job
right.
to write about TV, don't have enough time to watch everything.
Exactly.
So, it's very difficult to say whether it's a good or a bad thing, but it's definitely, like, a little baffling to couple the fact that TV is booming with the fact that everyone who's writing about TV is just shuffling all over the place.
Right.
So I guess that means whatever's happening to journalism is worse than whatever goodness is
right.
happening to the
or
TV business.
Or we're just not aware that this is, like, just a common thing in the life cycle of
That's true.
Publications. I have no idea, to be honest with you, but I just do think it's fascinating that this has all kind of happened simultaneously with all of these people shifting around and all these shakeups. So I was just wondering if we could really pinpoint if there was, like, a correlation between that and, like, what's happening with the industry. But,
well, the Grantland thing is pretty
well, that's
straightforward.
Its own thing, yeah.
It just happens to coincide with a lot of this other weird stuff.
Right.
Which is maybe that's clouding our judgment too much, because the Grantland thing's pretty huge. But
yeah. What else? Anything else we want to touch on that we feel is relevant to this conversation, or anything else?
Do you want to get into the too much TV side of things? Is there any takes you have on that?
I mean, I basically already said my piece. Like, I'm all for there being a lot of great stuff to watch. But no matter what, like, I'm not going to have the time to watch it all, no matter how great all of it is. But I do think it's, like, a little bit, I do think it's just a little bit frustrating that everyone wants to make it now because it's, like, the distribution is easier, you know, you can get top-tier actors to be in your shows. Like, TV's not a joke anymore. It's an art form. People respect it. People want to jump on it. And I feel like everybody wants to jump on it, and it's just leading to just a glut of shows. I mean, let's be honest. Let's maybe take this route. You've tried to, like, check out a few of the, like, network pilots for the fall, right?
Yeah. I watched...
And most of them were garbage.
What did I watch? I watched The Muppets.
I only watched, like, 10 minutes of The Muppets. It was fine, but I turned it off.
I watched Grandfathered.
Didn't watch that. The Grinder is pretty fun, though.
The Grinder I watched, I actually kind of enjoyed that.
Yeah, I watched, at least the second, I watched the second episode, too.
I've enjoyed the first two. What else was there? You know, there's so much stuff that I just didn't even try to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this is a network, but, like, The Bastard Executioner on FX, I just didn't even try to watch.
Yeah.
I didn't try to watch any of the NBC stuff, like The Player or Blind Spot.
I had some mild interest in Heroes Reborn, just because I thought that they were going to maybe get it good again, like it was when people really enjoyed it in the early days of Heroes. But it sounds like it's kind of a mess again, like it just kind of disintegrated, and I don't know.
I think people think their time is valuable, and part of the reason that they'll invest in a cable series more than a network series is because you're investing in, like, 10 hours, usually. Yeah,
exactly.
And not, like, 20. And I think until the network model can change in a way where people aren't held to this 22-episode agreement type thing, like, would Gotham have been appreciably better if it was only like 12 episodes? Probably.
Absolutely. Like, yes, I very much agree with that. Yeah.
Because basically they were signed on to make like 12 or 14, whatever it was, and then they were like, ah, just round it out, make 8 more, or make us 22. Right. And then the show was just grasping for straws and just got way out of whack.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like one of the things I've noticed about the recent changes in TV with all the new miniseries and various FX shows and HBO shows that have gone to
the anthology route?
Well, the anthology route and also just varying lengths of seasons.
Yes.
I think it's important to know how long it takes to tell your story and not try to tell a story that fits a certain length. Like, what was it? Top of the Lake and The Honorable Woman were like 7 and 8 episodes. Like, a lot of HBO shows, I think almost all HBO shows are just 10-episode seasons now.
Occasionally 8. Yeah.
And, I mean, maybe that's just a new standard where it's like fit everything into 10 episodes.
Right.
But it's definitely, it seems more beneficial to try to put all the best stuff in a shorter amount of time than to try to fill an exorbitant amount of time.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I don't know. I guess
I'll be honest, like, most of the network stuff I care to keep up with is comedy stuff. I really enjoy Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I'm excited for New Girl to come back. The Grinder is pretty funny. The first two were fine. But in general, like, I don't devote time to, I'm excited for the X-Files to come back, but that doesn't come back till January. I mean, that's technically going to be a network show, but,
and who knows if it'll even be good.
I'm optimistic about it. I think it'll be pretty fun. But
I think it's more important. I think shows should be good. Like, quality.
Yeah.
But I think it's almost more important that shows are interesting than if they're good or bad, because I think people just don't care about some, like, Vegas hitman who people bet on to see if he can commit whatever the hell The Player's about. I don't know.
With Wesley Snipes? Yeah, I have no idea. I couldn't tell you what that show is.
Like, I feel like people don't care about the Muppets and their sex lives. Maybe I'm wrong.
I don't know.
I haven't checked the ratings for the Muppets.
Here's what I've kind of taken away from the Muppets thing. It seems like the audiences, like people that I've talked to that have watched it, actually are really enjoying it. But the critics were like not so positive. So it seems like it's one of those shows that might live because it has an audience and people are just enjoying it, and I don't know if to some degree that's just people being happy that the Muppets are back on TV, or if they actually think it's, like, funny and clever and, like, just, like, a different take.
Yeah, every case is different.
Who knows?
But I think, by and large, there's gotta be something, there's gotta be interesting characters. Like, I think what a lot of networks get wrong is they think the premise has to be the hook. And I think the characters have to be the hook. Maybe that's just the way that I watch TV. But, you know, I was interested in Breaking Bad because Walter White was a fascinating character. Not because I wanted to imagine myself getting away with being a drug king. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I just... It's a very, like, big and complicated thing to try to sum up in a sentence or two.
Yeah.
Especially because everything is so different. Every situation is so different. But, you know, everything's changing.
There's just too much. There's too much on, and it's hard to tell. This is why... But see, I feel like this... Maybe people won't agree with this, but I feel like, for me, someone who likes to read this stuff and likes to dissect things... That it makes it easier to pick out what is going to be worth my time if I have, you know, four or five writers that I really respect that are all across the board, like, this is something you want to watch. This is essential. Like you were saying before. Exactly. So, I don't know. Lots of interesting stuff to talk about. There's just so much going on. I think for me, and I think for you also, like, most of the stuff we're really, really jazzed about is coming in the spring.
Yeah.
I think, The Americans and... Some of those other really, like, prestigious stuff that we're pretty up on.
Yeah, and I think it is... I don't know if anyone who's like this will have made it this far into this conversation, but it is worth noting that among family and friends, I'm usually, like... They'll usually say, you're looking, like, too deeply into this, like, who cares? Just if you like it, you like it.
Right.
It's like... And that's probably the way most people actually think about entertainment.
Absolutely.
So, that's worth noting, I think. But yeah, Fargo came back last night. I haven't watched.
But I heard really, really good things.
I'm really excited for that. I like The Leftovers. I think The Leftovers is good.
Apparently it's gotten... Would you say that there's definitely a quality jump?
I've only seen the first episode of the second season.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was really good. I think... That the first season was also really good. I think your mileage may vary based off of this group called the Guilty Remnants. I won't get too into it,
right.
but there was this group of people who reacted to the rapture-like events that happened on this show by walking around wearing all white, smoking, and never talking.
Mm.
And it was very culty, and I imagine that that group and the time spent with that group turned a lot of people off from the show.
Huh.
But...
Interesting.
The show definitely benefits from these recent point of view episodes it's been doing. And that's sort of the pattern that the pilot, or that the season 2 premiere took on.
Yeah.
And it was pretty good. I think that's a really interesting show, and it's definitely a show that tries to tackle bigger metaphysical questions than any other show on TV. So that's one of the reasons that it's just really interesting. And, Fargo is good.
I'm pumped for that, to get into that.
I think we should give a brief mention to Review.
Review ended,
because
second
Review's
season.
Because Review's second season is over, and obviously we won't spoil it, but... Just another fantastic season.
Oh, fantastic season of Review. We talked about it a little bit a few weeks ago when we did our comedy, all comedy podcast. I think you wrote your most recent column on it. So make sure check out GainesvilleScene.com. Hidden in Plain View is the column, right?
Right.
And you've done one a couple weeks ago on Mr. Robot, right? And then
Mr. Robot
this most
Review.
Recent column, Review.
And there's another one coming next week.
We'll
haven't
save
decided
it.
What it's going to be
we'll
about.
We'll save
yet.
It as a surprise, and you don't even know, so.
Or maybe I do.
Maybe you do. Anything else? Anything else interesting? Are you excited about Oscar season at all?
You know.
We're starting to get into the movie stuff. I'm excited. There's some really interesting stuff, I think, coming.
Yeah, I haven't paid that much attention. I watched a movie the other night, and I feared... I feared that my attention span is just gone from watching movies on my television. I feel like I have to be in a theater to watch movies now. Because I was watching that old Philip Seymour Hoffman movie, not old, but a couple years ago, A Most Wanted Man.
Yeah.
And I just got so bored. trying to focus for 2 hours on one thing that I was just on my phone half the time.
TV has broken you.
TV broke me. I guess Mad Max is the only thing that can bring me back. Mad Max and Mad Max and Whiplash. Those are like the two things that can keep my attention for whatever reason.
Huh. And so, but you feel like if you go to the theater, you're more locked into, locked into what's going on.
Definitely. I don't know. Yeah. We talked about the too much TV aspect of things, and I think that affects the way I watch things that aren't TV, because if I'm watching a movie, I'm like, gosh, I could have caught up on three different shows while I watched this one movie.
Right.
And, like, it just makes me, stresses me out. Yeah.
I'm still pretty pumped. There's some that I'm definitely looking forward to.
What are you most excited for?
I'm most excited for, well, there's two that have been out for a week now that I haven't gotten a chance to see. I really want to see Sicario. I really want to see The Martian. I don't think you're as interested in this, but I don't know why, but, like, I'm really jazzed about Bridge of Spies, the new Spielberg Tom Hanks movie. It just looks interesting to me, and I'm always down for, like, a good Spielberg jam. Love Tom Hanks as an actor, so...
We had a preview screening of Steve Jobs in Gainesville last
night. I'm actually more interested in that now. Did you hear that, like, it's... Have you heard this? That it's, like, not set up like a typical biopic? Like, it's basically just three scenes, which I think is just a really interesting approach. Sorkin can be kind of high on himself, but...
He's definitely one of the most interesting screenwriters.
But I think, yeah, I think in terms of dialogue and just, like, what he wants to put into his movies and TV shows is interesting. I was, like, really weirded out by Fassbender being Steve Jobs because they look absolutely nothing alike, but he's a terrific actor, and the praise seems pretty positive. I wasn't too excited about it. I'm definitely more interested in it now just because people seem to think it's good and it's interesting. That's interesting. Obviously, Star Wars, which is not till December, but that's probably, like, number one on my list.
Oh, definitely.
I'm trying to think of anything else that sounds... I feel like there's a whole bunch that
The Revenant is coming.
I can't even think about. Yeah, the new Iñárritu movie with DiCaprio.
Who directed Birdman.
Which, have you seen the trailer for that?
Yes.
Because it's kind of a cool trailer. Like, it's really neat. Like, it's really beautifully shot, and I was kind of, like, taken aback by just the trailer
also,
itself.
Also, I want to mention, I don't know if you've seen this, maybe you have because I'm a week behind on Project Greenlight, but I saw the trailer for The Leisure Class...
See, I need to look up the trailer because I didn't realize until yesterday that apparently after the finale, they're airing the movie? Did you read this?
According to the trailer I watched on Twitter yesterday.
What did it say?
It's going to be airing Monday, November 2nd.
Okay.
I believe. And the trailer, I was like, man, if I hadn't been watching this show, I'm pretty sure I wouldn't be watching this movie. But I feel like I have to.
No, I'm definitely going to have... We're going to have to watch it, and we're going to probably have to talk about it, too.
Definitely.
Because that's going to be funny.
Yeah, for sure.
You haven't watched the most recent episode?
No.
From two nights ago?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, it's... Typical Project Greenlight episode. but yeah, that's interesting. So The Leisure Class is airing November 2nd?
Yeah, and there's a full trailer for it on...
Released, well, like, by HBO?
It's a minute and a half. Yeah, it's on HBO's Twitter account was where I saw it.
I'm excited now. I'm going to have to go watch that. No, I saw that the movie was coming, but I didn't actually see the footage from it, so.
So, yeah. So, that's pretty much all we got.
That's it.
Today. So, hopefully next week we'll be back. We'll talk Fargo, perhaps.
Definitely. Fargo, and maybe I'll try to catch up on something else that's kind of...
Have you seen Nathan For You? I believe that comes back this week.
We can maybe talk some
Nathan For You, because I feel like that's an interesting conversation to have.
Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, we'll figure something out.
We'll be back next week.
Look for
Taylor's column on a mystery show to be announced. That'll be up on Tuesday, the column?
Next Tuesday.
Next Tuesday, right? So a week from today.
Yep.
Okay. All right, well, thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you next week. We appreciate your listens. Hopefully, we're going to get this up on a new platform. And
No Offense SoundCloud?
Yeah, No Offense SoundCloud. I just don't have the money for premium right now, and I just need to get these up in a place where we can actually have our whole library of podcasts so you guys can go back and listen to older ones if you miss them or want to hear certain things again. So we appreciate it. Thank you very much. And we'll see you next week.